Usually, when you describe something as a dystopia, it's an imagined world. It's a fictional place that's scary and chaotic. But in Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, her dystopia is based on real events. The novel, if you haven't read it, is about a male-dominated society where the name of God is used to take away the rights of women. They can't work. They can't own anything. Some are even forced to bear children for men they do not know, including the story's protagonist, Offred. The Handmaid's Tale was published over 30 years ago, but as you might already know, it's having a bit of a major revival in 2017. Since the election of U.S. President Donald Trump, sales of the book have jumped by 200%. I'm just saying, if you're trying to get a copy right now, good luck. I passed by a couple of used bookstores on the way home yesterday. I walked in and I said, any copies of The Handmaid's Tale? And they said, oh no, absolutely not. There's also the added buzz of a new TV adaptation, which premiered earlier this week. It's just been renewed for a second season. And you might remember I spoke to the star, Joseph Fiennes, or one of the stars, Joseph Fiennes, on Thursday. And yesterday, I got to speak with Margaret Atwood herself. She was a consulting producer on The Handmaid's Tale, and she even made a cameo, giving what sounds like a very hard slap to the face of lead actress Elizabeth Moss. It is a frightening cameo, Margaret.
Did it scare you?
It was a bit of a, do you know what a jump scare? It gave me a jump scare. Like I was startled from the slap, and then I said, oh my God, it's Margaret Atwood, which I found relatively comforting, actually, after the slap.
There you are. They added a sound effect. You must realize that.
Oh, the Foley artist.
Oh, the slap effect was not that loud in real life.
You didn't hit that hard?
I didn't.
No.
No, in fact, they kept saying, let's do it again, only hit her harder.
And you wouldn't do it.
I did.
Yeah.
But not that hard.
I understand. It's nice to have you here.
Lovely to be here.
I've never spoken to you before. I'm excited to talk to you.
There's a first time for everything.
Well, let's see now. Let's see. This book is part of the public and even political debate right now. Just the other day, Hillary Clinton quoted from the show in a rally about Planned Parenthood. How does it feel to be part of something that is so talked about right now, especially when this book was published in 1985?
Weird.
Yeah?
In a word, quite weird.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Well, it's just weird. I mean, don't you think it's weird?
I mean, I guess I do, but I want to know what weird means to you.
Weird means who would have supposed it. And weird also means there are people dressing up as the handmaids and appearing in legislatures and on the street with signs and for various, I mean, you can't tell from looking at them whether they're Hulu hires who are doing, you know, guerrilla marketing, mm-hmm. or whether they're other people.
Well, people have been dressing up as the handmaiden at Comic-Con and that stuff for years.
Yeah, yeah, but at Halloween,
yeah,
it's a different thing.
Yeah, right. but can't weird also mean heartening?
Weird is a very open term.
Yeah.
So yes, it's surprising, and who would have suspected it? And the cast of The Handmaid's Tale, because we were shooting here in Toronto. Mm-hmm. We began in September and finished in February. So on November the 9th, they woke up and thought, we're in a different movie from the one that we thought we were in.
Yeah, we're having that a lot. We've had a lot of guests who started making things before the election and turned out to be pretty prescient. We spoke to Joseph Fiennes the other day, just Monday, about the show, The Handmaid's Tale. And he talked about how there's a sense of responsibility he feels in being part of a work that's so prescient. Do you feel that too?
I think the entire cast feels it.
How do you feel it as the creator of the work?
Well, I suppose my sense of responsibility dates back to 1984. I'm not going to rewrite the book at this moment in time, although we've just announced a second season.
Yeah.
And since season one ends pretty much where the book does, we're going into uncharted territory with season two. So we'll see how all of that plays out.
I wanted to get into that because I've also read that you have no idea what happens to Offred at the end of the book.
I did not have an idea. The tapes that she made make it as far as Maine on their way to escaping to Canada. Mm-hmm. But we don't know whether she actually escaped or not.
So what about now? Now that it's going to be made into a second season of it.
Well, there are some books that just escape from the box and they go running around on their own. And people add, they do basically fan fiction, which is a very, very old thing. It goes back as far as, at least as far as the Iliad and the Odyssey. So the story escapes from its original container, and expands, and this apparently is now one of those books.
Do you feel like it's out of your control?
Oh, completely.
Do you feel like when you put something out there?
No, those handmaids are running around all over the place. They're uncontrollable.
Do you feel like is that a strange feeling? Is that a loss of control you feel when you put something out there?
Okay,
like that?
So every time you publish a book, once it's published, it's no longer in your hands anyway. It's in the reader's hands.
Right.
And every reader is going to have a different interpretation because every reader is different. So that happens anyway. But it's when people start adding to it and, using it in ways you may not have anticipated and in circumstances that you didn't predict, that is something that happens as well. So it's a compliment. It would be very convenient if I were dead.
Right.
Because then I wouldn't be sort of looming around.
They wouldn't be able to run it past you.
Hanging around in the hallway, smoking and scratching at the window. Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. So it is very convenient when the author is dead. But just think of me as being dead, and then everything will be okay.
I'll make sure to pass that on to the cast when I'm speaking to them for sure. Listen, I spoke to Margaret Atwood. She said she doesn't mind. Just make sure you think she's dead. Like,
yeah,
okay, we got it.
They're having a bit of trouble with that at the moment.
I want to go back to West Berlin in 1984. Can you tell me where you were in your life when you started writing this work?
Okay, so 1984, I would have been 44.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I decided to take on the complex of speculative fiction, 17th century Puritanism, and what the right in the United States was saying right then and there, mm-hmm. that they would like to do if they got the chance.
And I want to point out that there's nothing in this book, and you've said this a number of times, there's nothing in the story that hasn't happened somewhere in the world.
Yeah, there's a precedent for everything.
Was that a deliberate choice for you?
Absolutely.
Tell me what was behind that choice?
What was the rationale? I didn't want people saying, what a twisted, bizarre, sadistic imagination you have making all this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to be able to say, none of it's made up. People have done these things, and what people have done once, they're quite capable of doing again. So none of it is not on the human smorgasbord of possible things to do.
I think there's something really interesting about reading The Handmaid's Tale in 2016, which is when I read it, especially in this era, because I can just Wikipedia everything in the book and find out when these things actually happened. But I'm guessing when The Handmaid's Tale first came out, you must have been doing some convincing to people that, no, everything in this book did happen. None of this is made up.
A certain amount of convincing, but we have the historical note at the back in which a professor is giving them a paper on The Handmaid's Tale. And I put a number of the precedents in there, not all of them, but some of them.
Would you write it differently today?
Well, I would give people cell phones.
I read an article the other day that said most of the problems of any fiction can be solved if people just had cell phones.
Yeah. A lot of them.
All the miscommunications.
Well, but of course, in the world of The Handmaid's Tale, your cell phone account would be turned off at exactly the same time that your credit card is turned off.
The Handmaid's Tale has now been made into a TV show. In it, Elizabeth Moss plays Offred, the handmaid who tells the story. She's the property of a powerful commander and is forced to have sex with him with the idea of bearing his children. In this scene, she's just arrived at the commander's house and she's looking around her room.
A chair, a table, a lamp. There's a window with white curtains. And the glass is shatterproof, but it isn't running away, they're afraid of. Handmaid wouldn't get far. It's those other escapes. The ones you can open in yourself, given a cutting edge. Or a twisted sheet and a chandelier. I try not to think about those escapes. It's harder on ceremony days, but thinking can hurt your chances.
That's the voice of Elizabeth Moss as Offred in the new TV adaptation of The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. Now, speaking with Margaret now about her novel and its resurgence in 2017, Margaret, the clip we just heard is pretty faithful to the beginning of Chapter 2. An adaptation can be a fraught process for authors. Your work's been adapted before, including The Handmaid's Tale, and you are a consulting producer on the current show. Do you like seeing your writing adapted for the screen?
I mean, you can't say yes or no to that question. You would have to say which adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very good team, and I think the adaptation is absolutely faithful to the core idea of the book, which is nothing goes in that hasn't happened.
I mentioned there was an earlier film of The Handmaid's Tale. What do you think, though, is unique about being able to see this story unfold on screen now as part of an episodic television series?
Okay, so the episodic television series and streamed series and the ability to binge watch have created a whole new platform for particularly longer and more complex novels that once upon a time people would have said, no, that's not going to fit into 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. But because you have a story unfolding over time, mm-hmm. the way serialized novels used to appear in the 19th century, you are immersed, I think, a lot more in a very real, particular, nuanced and subtle way of storytelling. And a lot of novels are getting adapted in that way that once upon a time would not have seen a filmed version of themselves.
But what about the process of adapting this character for the Hulu series? Has watching Offred on screen made you appreciate her differently?
Well, Elizabeth Moss is an awfully good actress, mm-hmm. and she put herself in as a producer as well. The main writer and runner of the writer's room and showrunner is this guy called Bruce Miller, mm-hmm. and he's very, very thoroughly immersed in it. He introduces himself by saying, yeah, I know I've got one penis too many, but I hired a lot of women.
Oh, good, 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 good. One penis too many. Did you and Elizabeth Moss get to speak?
Oh, yes.
What did you talk about?
Stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you? Oh, good, good. Well, thanks a lot for coming in, and we'll see you next week.
Well, we ran into each other when we were checking into the hotel in, what city was that? Washington, mm-hmm. Because we've just been doing weeks of pre-launch promo in Washington and Los Angeles, and all of them were in New York. And we just looked at each other because we'd been reading the reviews, and we said, we could go home now.
Yeah. we don't have to do anything.
We actually have to do any of this. We don't even have to show the series. just go home. The response has been sort of surrealistically positive. You don't get this kind of response to something, and I'm sure it's because of the political climate.
You did an interview with Peter Zosky on CBC's Morningside back in 1985 about The Handmaid's Tale. Peter asked you to talk about the Republic of Gilead, the repressive society where sex outside of procreation is banned, and we have dug up from the archives some of that interview.
Oh, naughty you.
Let's take a listen.
What are you making of the way it's all turned out at this point in Gilead, which
not so hot for women.
But there are some good things about it.
You don't get whistled at on the street.
You don't get whistled at on the street. And you don't get...
Nobody climbs in your window in the middle of the night.
Well, which is a sardonic way of saying the streets
are
safe.
Yeah, women are protected, the streets are safe.
Margaret Atwood talking about The Handmaid's Tale with Peter Zosky on CBC Radio on Morningside in 1985. She's in studio with me now, not in the same building. Margaret, it's funny and it's a bit strange to hear that clip right now. Mm. Here you are on a CBC show 32 years later and we're talking about many of these same things. Do you feel differently about the themes in 2017 than when that was broadcast?
It's the same themes.
Mm-hmm.
Time has passed and we've seen a lot of other incidences of this and that. There is no totalitarianism worth its salt that doesn't try to control women. They try to control men too. But in different ways.
For the most part, the lording of power by men over women is very overt in this book. But there's one particular passage.
Well, it's a triangle. So top people are at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Wives of top ranking people have got more power than men at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So it's like a true hierarchical totalitarianism in that respect.
And the men at the bottom are working until they can get these wives of their own.
Till they deserve them.
Till they get
allotted them.
They get allotted this property, this wife.
Well, they get allotted a wife. I don't know. Do you think of wives as property?
I certainly don't. Of course not. But I couldn't help but think of that way in how these men might think about these wives in The Handmaid's Tale.
Well, they are. They're responsible for them because the wives can't have jobs or own money or anything. And that's just the way it used to be. And people go, oh, well, you're talking about the Middle East. I said, just hang on a minute. Roll back time about 100 years and you're right there.
There's one passage I want to talk to you, one that doesn't get talked about as much. because it's far closer to our current life. It's where Offred, in her previous life, who is still June at that point, finds out that she can't work anymore. And her husband, Luke, tells her not to worry and reminds her that they still have each other. And she says, he doesn't mind it at all. Maybe he even likes it. We are not each other's anymore. Instead, I am his. What did you want to say about in that passage about the nature of oppression?
Or about the nature of having a job.
What do you mean?
Well, if women are not allowed to have money or jobs, there's no place they can be except in the home. Okay, so if you're thinking of how to get women back into the home, the answer is get rid of the alternatives, which is what Gilead does. So on the other hand, turn that around and go to very, very poor countries where they do microbanking. They make mini loans to women to enable them to start businesses. As soon as they're earning a little money, their status goes up inside that society.
Yesterday on the website Reddit, I happened across your AMA. And I found it really interesting that this is a website that is primarily populated by those between 18 and 30 years old. And that passage I just read was the passage that stuck out to them the most. That was the passage that was most upvoted. Why do you think that is for that younger generation?
Well, I think we should probably ask them.
What, any speculation on your end?
Well, I think probably in that generation they've come to a little bit take for granted that women can have jobs, that they can have bank accounts, that they can have credit cards in their own names. Not so long ago, if you were married, you had to have your husband's permission to get a credit card. Mm-hmm. So they look at that and they probably flip it over and think about what that would be like if they were back in, for instance, 1950.
The show has been received so well, and the book sales are way up. At the Women's March that you attended here in Toronto, I saw women dressed as handmaids when I was walking down the street. Does the excitement around this, does that give you optimism? Does the march give you optimism around some of the issues in The Handmaid's Tale?
Yeah. So the question is, if the United States were to have a totalitarianism, what kind of totalitarianism would it be? And also, what would have to happen for it to have a totalitarianism? Mm-hmm. And I think what gives me some optimism is the fact that people in the United States are not sitting still for attempts to limit them, the kinds of attempts that are being made. And those attempts are being made in many, many different areas, including cutting off their access to health care, just for instance. Mm-hmm. So I think that the fact that there is a lot of pushback is what is going to weigh in on the side of this not happening.
Margaret Atwood, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
And a pleasure for me.
So there you go. I think now I'm a CBC host. Margaret Atwood is the author of The Handmaid's Tale. She was also a consulting producer on the TV adaptation of the book. We took a picture afterwards, and Margaret had these, I don't know how to describe them. They're black gloves, and on the outside of the gloves were like skeleton fingers. And she had them, and she wanted to wear them for the photo, and I asked if I could wear one of them. So if you go on our, I think on our Twitter or our Facebook or something, there should be a photo up there of me and Margaret Atwood wearing skeleton gloves. And sometimes things in your life you expect to happen, and then sometimes things in your life you don't ever expect to happen, and that's one of those things. I should mention The Handmaid's Tale. It so far hasn't been described as good or amazing. That's not because it's not of a great quality. That's because it's more terrifying and riveting and timely. The series airs on Hulu in the United States and on Sundays on Bravo here in Canada.